Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're here to answer your car questions, and you're welcome to join us when and ever you want. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I have a couple of people here helping me, and both of them are hairy-chested mechanics. They both have grease underneath their fingernails. They have a little bit more hair than I have, but they're a lot younger. Kevin is the service manager from Auto Dynamics, Grand Avenue and 99th Avenue, just north. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and that's Derek. Derek is Kevin's boss, but they work together like peanut butter and jelly. Kevin, how long have you been at Auto Dynamics?
16 years now.
16 years. How long is your parole after that? How long? Just come closer just a little bit. Okay, how long have you been with the family business, Derek Nide?
About 12 years.
Okay. Did you work out of high school with your dad?
Not out of high school, after college.
Okay. Folks, this is what Chuck and I go back to 1968, your dad. I remember your dad back in 1968. I remember him and Ken Vivian. Ken Vivian has since passed. But the two of them, they were gas station guys, and they were best of friends. And they went hunting and all that other kind of stuff. So I worked for Ken, but Chuck and Ken were Siamese twins. So when you got Chuck, you got Ken, and so forth and so on. They were a pair to draw to. They were both young. They were both handsome. They were both tough with respect to, you know, the employees and stuff like that. So I have a lot of experience with your father. And Kevin, have you seen any shenanigans that Derek does that looks like some of the stuff his dad did? Or does now?
Not necessarily. Derek's a little more reserved, I think, than his father.
Yeah, yeah. There's not too many people that... Okay, here's the story about your dad. 602-508-0960 if you want to talk about cars. We went hunting, and there was three of us. And we took Ken's truck, and we went up to north of Williams, north of the 40, for a buffalo hunt. It's a once-in-a-lifetime draw. So Ken had the license, but Chuck and I went along. So they take you out, and you have to sneak up on this herd and shoot one. Well, the buffalo is akin to a suburban, so there's no way you can do anything with a buffalo. So they have a tractor that comes and helps you quarter it. But your dad and Ken decided they don't need the tractor. So we were there for like a day and a half, and we were sawing and all that kind of stuff, and I wish they would have just... So later they came by and they said, we'll load it in the truck for you because we know we couldn't load it. And he says, but we're going to take a quarter. And so they go, yeah, we'll surrender a quarter. So you put all that buffalo in the back of the truck, and we're on our way back to town, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and we're coming down I-17. And there's a couple of hitchhikers off to the side of the road. So Ken pulls over. Now, I'm sitting in the middle of the front seat. Chuck's on my right. Ken's on my left. He's driving. And I'm thinking, where are we going to put those kids? So they come up to the passenger window, and they say, where are you going? He goes, we're going to Phoenix. He says, you guys need a ride? Yeah, yeah. He says, well, hop in the back. So they lifted up the shell camper lid. They dropped it down, and they went to go in. And obviously, we were leaking a little blood. They get in, and they got their hands in. It's a little slippery. And then they get their feet in. Then they look at their hands, and they both jump out of the truck and run away. The funny part about that was funny there, but where did they wash their hands and their clothes? So they're walking down the highway in the middle of the night covered with what looks to be human blood, or what it wasn't. And those two guys laughed the whole way home. They thought that was the funniest thing. And they both admitted, we just didn't think about what we were hauling. We just said, get in the camper. We'll take you to Phoenix. And neither one of them had... It was on my mind. I was wondering how we were going to fit five people in a bench seat on the front of a Ford truck. But, yeah, your dad and I go back. And I was 17 years old back then. And your dad had a Shell station, Indian school on I-17, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then from there, where did he go? Do you remember?
I don't.
It was another gas station, and then he ended up with the garage, and then he ended up with Sun City.
Correct.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Sun City RV,
mm-hmm.
And then he's still there.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and then he also has an RV trade-in place or sell or...
Called private party sales.
Okay, so he's facilitating people to sell their motorhome, and he's bringing the buyer and the seller together.
Correct. It's a park and sell, for lack of better words,
okay.
For cars, trucks, boats, RVs, anything you need to sell.
Okay, so he's managing that. You got the auto repair shop, Auto Dynamics,
mm-hmm.
and that's between the two of you?
Yep.
You split all the responsibilities. What percentage yours and what percentage is his? You know he's listening.
Pretty much all my responsibility.
Okay. I just wanted to get that out of you. I knew Alan, my son, wouldn't admit it. But 602-508-0960. We're here to help you out. Kevin and I have quite a few years in the dirty finger, greasy finger time. And Kevin now runs the Auto Dynamics at Grand Avenue. It's on 99th Avenue, just north of Grand, right?
Correct.
And so how many years have you been there, Derek?
We've been there since 1982.
1982. So that's 18 and 20. That's 38 years.
Yes, sir.
How do you like my math, big dog?
Pretty
okay.
Quick.
We've got a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
That would be Lenny.
Lenny, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Thank you for taking the call.
You bet.
I've got an 02 Buick Sabre. It's got 63,000 miles on it. And right to the left of the steering column, you have a driver's information center there where you can punch in different information to ask for the temperature, the oil pressure, and so forth and so on. But the driver's information has went blank. It went blank. It's totally blank. It doesn't work.
Okay. Have you run across that, Kevin?
Absolutely. We see that pretty frequently. Quite often it's a problem inside the instrument cluster itself. What exactly doesn't display?
Nothing.
Nothing at all.
Nothing. It's all black. It's just all blank. It's like it wasn't played. Is there maybe a fuse that controls the whole center?
I think that's part of the whole instrument panel. And is there a printed circuit board on the back of that thing?
Yes.
Okay. To give you an idea, Lenny, we've got this big printed circuit board that might be 2 feet wide that goes from the left to the right side of your instruments. And then we take and screw this circuit board to different small studs to fire up the power. It's kind of tough to check the driver information center for power and ground because you really don't know where it's coming from. But there is a way to check for power and ground. But if all you've got is the driver information center that's bad, and you don't have any, you haven't lost your dash lights, and you still have your turn signals and all that kind of stuff, it would stand to reason that would be something that most likely you would have to deal with. Kevin, do you even know if they make that driver information center for that, or the screen, I should say?
I don't believe so, but typically when a car of that nature comes into our shop and has that type of scenario, we've diagnosed it as an instrument cluster problem. We'll normally pull the cluster. We can check for power ground behind the cluster and make sure that there is power to the cluster itself, and then deem it as the cluster if indeed there's power and ground. We have a mobile guy that comes out and actually does instrument cluster repair.
Okay. So he's going to come. Is he smart enough to know the circuit by, he knows that thing you say, the driver information center's down, and he gets out his little tools and he goes, oh, it's right here?
Indeed. That's his forte. He's called the guru, and he's done that for us a number of times, and we've always had good success with him. There used to be a company called Instrument Sales and Service in Phoenix that did instrument cluster repair.
16th Street, I think it was.
Bingo.
Yeah.
I don't even know if they're around anymore.
I don't either, but they were pretty good.
Yeah.
And a lot of the GM people would say, you only have two choices. You live with it or you buy a brand new cluster. But they stepped in the middle, and there was a stepper motor problem where they were able to replace the stepper motor that fixed the whole problem. I don't even know what the stepper motor is. I know it was an integral part of display and everything.
Absolutely.
So it was that. But anyway, Lenny, the good news is there appears to be some mobile guys, or at least one, called the Guru. But he's not going to work for customers because he wants the dash panel out.
Correct.
So it's not likely that he's going to come to your house, Lenny, but if you have a garage that you deal with, ask them if they have the capabilities to test, remove the instrument panel, and if they know somebody from a mobile nature that comes. And then you would say something like this. You would say, I want to make sure that I don't spend a whole bunch of money and end up where I am now. So I need to make progress. And so otherwise, if I spend a bunch of money and we don't make any progress, then I'm paying for a bunch of guessing, and I don't really want to do that. So that's a conversation you can have.
Can I add something here on this?
Sure.
On the instrument panel itself, the car more than it's about. There's a green dash going across there. And if you look out for a while, suddenly it's got all kinds of garbled information going across, like it's communicating with the computer.
It's more likely that it has some kind of a loss of power or a loss of ground, because when it starts acting crazy, you're not going to really diagnose it. You're just going to go in and look for some standards. That would be a good thing to give them, but is that all the time, or is that just intermittent?
Yeah, when I go in the morning and turn on the ignition, I see that green bar going across. Now, this is not part of the driver's ignition. This is on the dashboard itself.
Uh-huh.
The green bar is across on the left there, and you see this garbled information going across.
Okay.
Well, maybe it's talking to the computer.
When you're driving down the road at night, does everything appear to be normal with the exception of the driver?
Yes.
Okay.
Everything's fine.
Okay. That's the kind of symptom information the shop's going to want. That's what you need to say. I took a picture of it driving down the road at 9 o'clock at night, and this is what I see. And then when I've got this bar going across, then my wife steers the car when I take a picture. And then, you know, that kind of stuff. All right, you can laugh at me, but here's the deal. Kevin, a guy comes in with three pictures. Okay? Mm-hmm. How much did he save himself in test drive time and diagnostic time?
Quite a bit, because actually reproducing or giving us, you know.
1 minute?
Yeah.
Example.
So I know you're giggling at me, Lenny, but in fact.
I'm teasing you.
Taking pictures of the three things is better than just describing it. And I would think that the minimum you would save yourself would be $50, would be the minimum. It could be above that. So, do you have a shop that you deal with?
Not regularly, no.
Okay, what part of town do you live in?
Central Phoenix.
Okay. All right, North Central or South Central?
Mid-Central.
Okay. So, I don't know. There's Martin's Auto Repair at 16th Street and in school. There's 25th Street Auto.
I'm near.
Okay.
I'm at Clark there on 12th Street in Glendale. There's that.
Okay.
Kelly Clark, is that Kelly?
Yeah,
Clark?
Kelly Clark's there. Yeah, yeah. I know Kelly, and he passed away, but Kelly Clark's is a good place, and his family's running it. So yes, I think I would take it there, and just say, show him what you got, and then say to him, "Do you have somebody mobile that can fix it?" And under the best of conditions, he's using the same guy that Kevin's using. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks for your time, Mark. I certainly appreciate it.
No, you're more than welcome, Lenny. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We have five lines, so you're more than welcome to use one. Again, Kevin and Derek are from Auto Dynamics, and they're on Grand Avenue, just north of 99th. They've been there a very long time, although you wouldn't look at it because neither one of them has a gray beard. But I've sent a lot of people to you, and you've always made them happy, which, of course, makes me happy. So, anyway, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and sitting here to my left is Kevin, who's the service manager for Auto Dynamics, Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. Next to him is Chuck Nydig. Derek, this is your father.
Yes, sir.
Have you ever regretted it? I'm kidding, of course. How are you, Chuck?
I'm doing good.
Good. I think you should be really proud of him, because there's been times I've sent people to his shop, and I always get nice compliments. So I don't always get compliments, but only maybe three a year are mad about the experience, and it's never happened for you, Derek. So anyway, we're going to go to the phones because we've got callers right now. Can you bring Jerry up for us?
There.
Okay, Jerry, good
Hello,
morning.
Mark.
Yes.
Hello, Mark.
Yes, sir.
I've got a single axle, 3,000-pound trailer that the tongue, the section that goes just over the top of the ball, is cracking. But the rest of the connection is fine. Now, do I have a big issue, or?
Well, here's the deal. I want to ask you something. Does the cup fit over the top of the ball, or is it a clamshell?
No, it's a cup that fits over the top of the ball.
Okay. Is that whole tongue assembly, it's only going to be about 12 inches long, is that welded or bolted to the tongue of the trailer?
That's all completely welded up.
Okay.
It's all solid.
I can't possibly tell you if it's safe or not. I can tell you that what I would do is take it to a welding shop, and it's either going to be a 2 or 2 and 5 sixteenths ball. And I would say to them, I want you to torch off this one and put a new one on it. They come with a square butt on them. So they'll just lay it down over your pipe or over your tongue and re-weld it. But as far as me being able to tell you if it's safe or not, I think you should err on the side of safety.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I just figured I'd weld it up real quick and use it because I gotta use it for a couple of days before I can get it to the shop. So.
Well, do you? How good of a welder are you?
Oh, well, I'm pretty mediocre.
Okay. Okay. Are you gonna weld the top part of the hitch to where it's cracked? You said.
Yeah, I'm just gonna weld up the crack.
Okay, from the top.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're not gonna kind of interfere with the bottom of it that rubs on the ball.
Nope.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, good luck to you, Jerry. Good luck to you. And David, you're up next. How can we help you?
Hello. Yes. Thanks for taking the call. Appreciate it. I am in the process of buying a new car, and as everybody is unsure about, it's a used car, so it's not brand new. It's 17 and it's got 38,000 miles. And I guess what my concern is how, or is there a place that I can take it to, I don't know if over the weekend or first available is Monday, to have someone look at it and say, yeah, you're doing okay, this is good.
Sir, this is Kevin with Automotive Dynamics. Most shops do pre-purchase inspections. For instance, we do out at our shop, and we normally charge about $25 to do a pre-purchase inspection, which includes looking underneath that vehicle for any kind of leaks, any kind of obvious mechanical repair. We look for any signs of, collision, possibilities and things of that nature, and that way we can tell you if there's something that stands out that's a red flag that might be something to be wary of before the purchase.
And and I'll kind of dovetail in behind him, David. Almost everybody, you called it a pre-purchase inspection.
Yes, sir.
And there's safety inspections and used car inspections. Everybody has a different name for it. You guys are kind of cheap at $25. I'm just telling you, if they would have asked me the range, I'd say 75 to 125. Now, if you check the underside, do you check it for codes?
We don't normally scan it unless, depending on the year, make, and model. If it's an older vehicle and, what have you, with 30,000 miles, there's probably not as much I'd be concerned about as if it had 130,000 miles.
Okay. So these are the things that separate everybody. There's guys out there that do scans. They do tailpipe emissions. They do fuel pressure. They look at maintenance records. They do all that.
Sure.
And they rip the car apart. And the idea is this thing has $800 worth of work it needs now. So negotiate the sale of the car with that idea. So it's kind of like that. You can use pre-purchase inspection, used car inspection, but what you say to them is I want you to tell me everything that's wrong with the car right now and that will be wrong with the car in the next couple months. and that's
right.
That's what it really boils down to. Kevin, of all the inspections you and Derek do, how many of them bear fruit for the customer?
As far as deeds or?
No, yeah, as far as you say to them, this is a really great car, as opposed to this is a huge rolling pile of manure.
It's about 50-50, to be honest with you. With a car with 30,000 miles, I mean, a 2017, more than likely, if somebody has taken care of that car for the few years of, age that it is, it's still in pretty good condition. And one of the things that we'll look at also is the maintenance schedule. At 30,000, what does that car do for? And has it been done or has it not? Sometimes you can see that on a Carfax, depending on where the car was serviced prior to, and sometimes you won't know. So we prepare the customer also. Say that we found nothing wrong with the car, but again, we pull up a maintenance schedule and say, here's what you'll be looking at, though, as far as this mileage interval, needs a transmission service, manufacturer recommends, et cetera, and this is what the average cost is to have that service done.
Now, who's paying for the Carfax?
That's a good question.
Okay, because I was going to say, you don't have that in your $25.
No.
There's a Carfax on it that they have and provided, but I don't have all the details of it.
Okay.
So I think I'm just getting a sugar-coated version.
Well, and the Carfax gives you owner 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and it tells you mileage. And there's probably 50% of our industry reports our service to the Carfax people. I don't, because they're going to use it to market my customers. So the Carfax, it'll say, I saw one the other day, and there was car wash here in town, and it had 19 entries for oil changes. Mm. This is a car that had 200,000 miles that one of the tires fell off. So I was amazed that they had gathered that information, and I just numbered the oil changes one after the other. But I've seen, just like you guys, I've seen Carfaxes that shows the car's got a salvage title. I've seen Carfaxes that show that the mileage isn't correct or that there's a discrepancy. So that's why it's nice with a Carfax. If you're going to buy that car and take it for a used car checkover, you tell them to give you a copy of the Carfax.
Okay.
Just tell them, I want a copy of the Carfax, and I'll pay for the pre-purchase inspection and take a picture of my driver's license, and here's my cell phone number, and I'll be back in a couple hours.
Yeah.
So.
All righty.
Okay.
I appreciate it. And so you're on Grand Avenue is what I heard?
Grand Avenue and 99th on the northwest corner.
And if you, yeah.
That's closest.
1 minute.
And then, and I want to tell you something else, too. You don't let him worm out on you on that $25. He's going to raise this price as soon as he leaves here. but you get the $25, David, okay?
All right, you do. Well,
all right.
Appreciate your show. Thanks again.
You betcha. There's other good shops in the Valley other than Auto Dynamics. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing's been around since 1970. Both Thelma and Brian come from families who poured gas and delivered gas and worked on cars in 1968, which is where I met the Thompson family. I don't think Brian was even born back then. But anyway, he's on Main Street just east of Stapley. He's on the south side of the road. Brian and Thelma own and operate it. You couldn't find two nicer folks. And they're the only shop in Mesa that I can really recommend. There's guys out there that are good, but I'm looking for the best. So when it comes to top-notch shops for Mesa, my Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is the place I would suggest you be. We'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. At the end of the day, it's 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. If you'd like to call us and give us an idea about a car question or problem you have, then you have three of us here. Well, I'm not going to count Chuck, but three of us here that have grease under our fingernails. You don't have much grease under your fingernails. Okay. All right. Well, I'll help you put the headphones on, and we'll go like this. How's that? Okay. I'm going to turn you on now. So let me see your fingernails. Oh, okay. He's missing one finger, and there's no grease in the fingernails, Derek. when you shake your head, you have to say yes. Well, look at mine. Okay, it's the same way.
Well manicured.
Yeah, his are.
Yours are.
Oh, yeah. Tell that to my wife. Okay, all right. We're going to pull your mic away just a little bit. Anyway, 602-508-0960 if you'd like to chime in or ask us a car question, 602-508-0960. Strictly Diesel is up on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. What's important about Strictly Diesel is he does a great job on diesel trucks. He's a diehard diesel service, repair, and parts place. They work on both foreign and domestic light diesel trucks, Chevy, Ford, Dodge. They're really, really good. So if you've got a diesel problem nobody else can fix, then I would probably talk to Nate at Strictly Diesel. Give him the symptoms. He doesn't care what the guy around the corner says is wrong with your car. Just give him the symptoms, and he'll explain to you how they would approach that. So Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. And Nate is a guy that's, I think he stands 7 feet tall, Derek, and he has hands like tennis rackets. He's a really big, handsome kid, but when he shakes your hand, it's like he's shaking your fingertips to your elbows.
Oh, wow.
He's just a big guy, but he's exactly like the kind of guy you hope your daughter brings home. You know what I mean? That's the kind of guy he is. He's married, so we're not going to try to fix him up, but that's the way it is. So, Derek, you're the one that sits, and you're the lightning rod for Auto Dynamics?
Yeah, the guy behind the scenes.
Are you the lightning rod?
Yeah.
Okay. So all the stuff that flows downhill ends up on your desk to some extent?
To some extent, yes.
Yeah. That's no different than any other shop. There's always somebody that's, and I'm not trying to do a visual, somebody sitting in the tower that the crap, that doesn't go downhill, it goes uphill. So oftentimes, so you deal with customer complaints.
Definitely, yes.
And right now with the way we are, Kevin, you and Derek, how about parts? Have you seen any effect on parts since we've been in this pandemic?
To be honest with you, very little. Okay. I know some of our suppliers have cut down on their staffing, so some of the drivers, you know, they've either gone to part-time or, you know, furlough and things of that nature. But we, so far, thank goodness, have not had a whole lot of parts delays or problems. Now, I know some of the manufacturers and the dealers, some of those can be a little tricky.
Yeah.
But for the most part.
I agree with you. There's three big dogs in town, Factory Parts Plus and Worldpac. I won't tell you who I talked to, but I talked to two of them, and they talk about they're north of 50% down. And I also talked to a shop owner the other day that had three cars in a day. Mm-hmm. And he's used to considerably more than that. So our industry's taken a beating, but we're not really prepared to disinfect our waiting rooms and to deal with the transfer of the car between them and us and then us to them. So like many others, we've developed, you know, the Lysol rags, and the technicians are wearing gloves, and, you know, we've got them in the masks and all that kind of stuff in an effort to kind of draw that line between us. But we only have three chairs in our living room, or our customer service. We used to have 10 or 12, so we got them spaced 10. They still pull them up next to one another and yak. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and then we have the line in front of the thing, in front of the counter, and they'll still walk past the line.
Yep.
And put their hands on the counter. So then we put those splash shields in there. Mm-hmm. One guy just moved the splash shields out of the way. It's okay. None of us are used to this.
Right.
So, Chuck, when did you first start doing business in the gas business? I think that's where you started, in the gasoline business.
My first business was on Indian School Road and the freeway.
Okay.
I started it on Friday the 13th of May, 1972.
Okay.
So that was back when the Dead Sea was still sick.
Okay. But I knew you in 1968 when you and Ken Vivian are friends.
Right.
Okay. Where were you working then?
68, I probably just started with Standard Oil of California. You know, I had company stations back then.
Okay.
And then stayed with them, became a manager of one of the stores, and just decided to, when Ken moved up here, I got fired from Standard Oil of California.
That surprises the hell out of me.
that's a story in itself, you know, the rules and regulations. But anyway, I was their number one store for a long time, and the reason being, but we'll go into the story. But then I came up here and, you know, obviously met Ken, said, well, come on up here and see if we can't get together. And then I started that station on 7th Avenue in Bethany with him.
Mm-hmm.
He had the backing to do it. And so I started that until ran it for a few months until, you know, the area was so bad back in 72. You know, a lot of crime in that area. Got robbed 11 times in 3 days, and I said, I don't think this is for me. So we got out. And
he had his gas pump jockeys carrying money in their pockets. He wouldn't buy him a cash register or something. I'm kidding you, of course.
We literally had a safe mounted inside one of the canopies poles to bring in money so they wouldn't take it. It was a tough area. My last day at work there, I had the station, one of the employees, nicest guy in the world, was working graveyard shift, and somebody came in and, I don't know if they tried to run, whatever, but they shot him, and I got a call that, I had to get out of the station. It didn't kill him, thank goodness, but, I just said, boy, this is enough of this. It's just a bad area and tough area of town back then.
Okay. Now, you'll notice he just glossed right over the fact that he got fired from Standard. And they were wrong. You got to know Derek. Derek is Chuck's son.
Oh.
So we are commiserating between the two of them.
Yeah.
And I told you about the Buffalo story, your dad was there.
Uh-huh.
And he was part of the conspiracy. I was just an innocent 12, 15, 16-year-old kid. Oh, I was.
Sure.
I looked at the age difference. I was probably 16 years old when I started working for Ken Vivian.
Yeah.
And the two of them were a pair to draw to. But you guys went hunting and fishing a lot together.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
So
what was the Buffalo story?
I'll tell you later.
Okay.
All right.
Never heard that.
Story. Him and Ken went hunting, and Ken had said, I got a load of gas coming in. It's 9,000 gallons of gas. And I said, okay, I figured he left a check on the table. So the guy dumps the 9,000 gallons of gas, and we got no money. And he's not happy. So the next day, Ken called the bank, and the bank
let me have a blank check to write for the gas and put it in his account. So then I took it to the driver next day. So anyway, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or car problem, we welcome your call. Forty-five minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday we're here from 10 to noon talking about car and car repair issues, and you're welcome to join us. You're welcome to call us and tell us, I've got this kind of car and this kind of problem, and then we're going to ask you questions like, when does it vibrate? Do you feel it in your butt or do you feel it in the steering wheel? And you're going to, and we're going to say, does it always do it in the morning? Does it do it after it's warm? Those are the kinds of questions, and then we can kind of narrow it down and give you some advice on how to talk to your shop and tell you that it could very well be this and it's likely to be in this area. That's kind of stuff we're good for. We've got Kevin, who's the service manager of Auto Dynamics at Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. We have Chuck here, who's the big dog of the Auto Dynamics, and then his son, Derek's the general manager. Working for your dad's kind of tough, isn't it?
It is.
It is. wait till your son gets old enough, and then he's going to say, you know, you're just like Grandpa, and that's what I'm hearing now.
Well, I got two girls, so...
You know what? Andy's my daughter, and she's turned into, you know, something my wife and I never imagined, not because she was a girl, because she loved to play volleyball, and she was good in school and stuff, but... Now her and my son are running it, and they're doing probably a better job than Renee and I did. So let's go talk to Hector. Hector, good morning.
Yes, sir. I have a 01 Nissan Sentra that starts, idles, and then stalls. But when I take off the inlet tube from the throttle body and disconnect the mass sensor, it runs and idles. But I can't keep it on any other way.
Are you sure it's the MAP sensor? It's not usually on the throttle body. Could it be the throttle position sensor or the idle air control motor?
Oh, no. I mean, I disconnect the whole inlet tube, but I also have to disconnect the MAP sensor from the inlet tube also, and to keep it going.
Okay, the inlet tube, is that the fresh air tube from the air filter to the mouth of the engine?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so is this sensor in that tube?
Yeah, the actual mass sensor. It's the mass airflow sensor that's in the tube.
Okay. Well, I heard MAP, and you're talking about MAP. That's okay. No, it's my fault. Yeah. It's not yours. So I don't know. See, the thing of it is Kevin, we would hook up a scanner, and we would look at the readings, and at idle, just for customer's sake, we want to see 5 to 10 at idle. And when we stuff it to the floor, we want to see 40 or 50. And that's grams of air that it's inhaling. So when you take it off, I don't know that that's a valid test. I don't know that that would condemn the mass airflow sensor. I don't think it's a good idea. Have you priced a mass airflow sensor?
Yeah, it's like $100, $113.
Okay. If you want to guess, you can. I want you to make sure that between where the mass airflow sensor is and the mouth of the carburetor or the mouth of the engine, I want you to make sure that ductwork has no leaks at all. Does that make sense to you?
Okay.
Because all the air that goes into that motor has to go past that mass airflow sensor. So if the mass airflow sensor is here and 6 inches behind it we have a big old air leak, then the mass airflow sensor can't measure that air that's unmetered. So, you know... I don't know what to tell you. That's not a test that we would do. We wouldn't come to a conclusion, right, Kevin?
Right. The thing is, with that type of scenario, has anyone scanned the onboard computer for trouble codes?
You know what? There's no engine light. I bought that one blue driver scan machine, and I tried that, and nothing comes up. And I can't keep the car on long enough to actually do it to scan while the car is running.
Okay. So... even without a check engine light on, does not mean there's not a trouble code stored. Quite often there can be codes stored, but they're not hard fault codes. Uh-huh. With a generic type scanner, you're not always going to see that. The things that we look at is with a professional type scanner, sometimes we can see codes that a generic scanner will not. But the other part of it is we look at parameters, which is what Mark was explaining before. If we can have the car running or keep it, you know, running with a scanner hooked up, there are different things that we look at. That are called parameters, that certain sensors and things of that nature need to be within certain ranges to be in either good or bad?
It's two things. You can look at the code, and that's kind of knowing that you have a fever, okay? But our scanners we have cost thousands and thousands of dollars, and we can go look at the mass airflow sensor. So like I said, we want, let's pretend, 10 grams of air at idle. And then when we throttle it up and hit it to the floor and let it go, then we want that to go from 10 to 100. And as soon as we close it, it goes back to 10. So we're going to watch the performance to make sure that the signal is being sent by the MAF, the mass airflow sensor. But sending it to the computer, it still has to control the fuel delivery. And the computer controls how much fuel it is based on how much air is being sucked into the engine. And this all happens like 20 times a second. So our scanners give us the ability to look at downstream where the scanner you're likely to have. And people use the word scanner. It's a code reader. It's just different. It's kind of like you have a fever, but we can go in and see where the fever's at and all that kind of stuff. So Kevin, a diagnostic, he brings it in and he says, tell me what you think I need to replace, and I want to replace it myself. What's the estimate?
Okay, so talking about wanting to just plain replace a part without diagnosing it accurately?
No, let's pretend he comes to you or any shop and he says, I want you to check it out and tell me what's wrong.
Okay, so a diagnosis starts at about $120 and escalates from there.
Okay.
It really, you know, depends on time spent, how many codes we have, and what all we're having to, you know, accurately test.
Okay, so he doesn't have any codes. So let's assume we're not going to chase codes. So at this particular point, we're looking at our scanners and trying to figure out where the disconnect is between what's moving to the engine. He could have a fuel problem.
Absolutely.
He could have a fuel problem.
Sure.
So the real question is it an air problem? Is it a fuel problem? Is the fuel pressure regulator falling on its face? Does the EGR open up and kill the motor? We've got all these dynamics that because that's what happens and makes it happen. I'm thinking that the 75-125 is a good range to be in, and I know we are the same. So it's kind of like, if I use it all, I'm going to call you, but many times I'm not going to use it all.
Right.
Yeah, I'm thinking most of us are going to be able to track that down within 1 hour of time, and if their labor rate's 135, then it'd be 135.
Absolutely.
So that's what I would do, Hector. Where do you live in town?
I'm in Santan Valley, but I'm going to bite the bullet and take it down to whatever shop you recommend right now.
Okay. Where do you go in Phoenix? Do you when you come from Santan, are you coming north and grabbing the 60, or are you going west, or where are you going?
Well, I have taken it to I think you mentioned a shop on Main Street. I've taken it there a couple of times.
Okay.
Thompson's?
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
A good guy.
Okay.
I don't have anybody. That Santan area, I don't have anybody. So if they're going to be in that part of the town, Central Mesa, then them. I kind of take the Warner and I-10, but that kind of sweeps. We split that area in half. And so we just don't have anybody down in that area that has been able to pass the test, so to speak. Okay? But anyway, I strongly suggest that if you're happy with Thompson's, go back there.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Okay. You're welcome. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Kevin, the service manager at Auto Dynamics, and they're on Grand West of 99th Avenue. Then we got Derek. Derek sits here. According to Kevin, Derek, you show up late and you leave early. I'm just trying to get him alive. He's laughing, isn't he?
He is.
Yeah. That isn't true.
It's not.
Okay. All right. And you've got a couple of youngsters.
I do. Two girls, 3.5 and 2.5.
Uh-huh.
And, they're a lot of work.
They're not anything near when they hit 16. What you got right now is nothing compared to what those girls are going to turn into between 16 and 20.
I can imagine.
You're not going to be very smart when they turn 16. Only they're going to be nice to you, so you'll sign for their driver's license. But you should be like all the rest of us. Here's the deal. The kid comes to, and you insist, he comes to the door and asks for you when he takes her out on a date. And so it's a joke that you know, you're cleaning a gun in the living room when he comes in. Those are all the old things that we used to talk about. But what worked well for me was I would shake his hand, and then I would look him straight in the eye and say, what time are you planning on getting her home? And the one guy I really liked, he said, Mr. Salem, what time do you want me to get her home? Everybody else kind of made up a time. And so, my daughters would get mad at that. But it's okay. It's fun to be a dad. Some of the guys would just kind of look him in the eyes and growl. You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, when you're a 16-year-old kid, that it kind of impresses upon you what, you know, the father is expecting. So you'll have a lot of fun because you got two girls.
Can't wait.
Yeah, can't wait. You know, we'll talk to you in, how old are they, three?
Three and a half and two and a half.
Okay, well, we'll talk to you when they're 16 and see how well you love that. Okay, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Chuck, it's been a long time that we've known one another, and I don't know who's been in trouble more, you or me.
Oh, well, I'm guessing me.
You're guessing you?
I'm guessing. You know, I don't know. A lot of years in business, that's for sure, and you stumble over, you learn from your mistakes, and you make a lot of mistakes along the way in 47 years of business. It's just part of growing up in business, I guess.
It's learning from your mistakes. The opposite is making the same mistake over and over again and never learning from it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I remember at the gas station in 1968, remember the quick change artists? Those guys that would come in and give you a 20, and then you're counting out the money, and they go, oh, wait a minute, let me give you a 10. Oh, wait a minute, I'm going to give you the 20 and the 10. And I got hit by one of those.
Yeah.
I mean, he had me so, and it was a great thing. I mean, the way he performed, he just took all the money.
He was good.
And so Ken showed up. And he was really mad at me.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, okay, why don't you teach me, you know, what do I do after that? And he goes, I can't teach you. They've never hit me before. Oh, so you're mad at me. And I was a teenager back then. I was 16 years old. But that was one of the things on the freeway. That was one of the things that we saw a lot was the quick change guys. Mm-hmm. So we were taught, take their money, put it in the till, and that's it. And if there's going to be any transactions, oh, wait a minute, take this 20 and break it in half, then you've already given them their money back, and then you take the 20, and then if they want anything more, it's no. I only can open the till twice.
Yeah, a lot of employees got caught with that. I'm sure you did.
Oh, my too. Personally.
Yeah.
I personally. I remember one night, though, I think you and Ken were in his 442, his Oldsmobile, and you were sitting at the intersection of Broadway and Priest. I was sticking the tanks, and folks, when you stick the tanks, you have this long piece of wood, and you drop it down in the tank, and then when you pull it up, it says 60 inches. So you have 60 inches of gas in the tank, and we knew that how many inches and quarter inches was gallons, so you looked at this thing. So Louis was Louis was sticking the tanks, and I pretended I was going to come and take over for him, so I pretended like I was going to run him over. Now, I didn't expect him to jump on the stick. So it's like a pole vaulter. He jumps up and he's holding on the stick. So I'm kind of, whoa. And he breaks the stick and he falls down.
Oh.
But you and Ken were at the traffic light, and Ken saw that, and he wasn't happy. He wasn't happy because we broke his stick. He wasn't happy that I drove fast at Louis. And so, but one other real quick story. Louis was working on a car, and he was underneath the car, and they had the big metal grate with the grease pit below it and had little holes in it.
Sure.
And this is how we learned. Louis was smoking as he did his thing, and then he took his cigarette and he dropped it over his shoulder and put it in the hole. Hmm. Well, it's a pit full of oil and gas. So it blew up, and the plate just slammed him up against the car. Then when the plate fell down, it slid to the left, and he fell in the pit of old oil. And none of us ever smoked and dropped a cigarette.
And no wonder Ken was always angry with you.
He was angry
like that going on.
I didn't have anything to do with that, Chuck. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You'd like to call us, we'd like to hear from you. We'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 602-508-0960. Sitting next to me here is Kevin, the service manager of Auto Dynamics in Sun City. Then next to him is Chuck, who is Derek's dad. And Chuck is kind of retired right now. Derek, you're kind of handling the show for on the Auto D side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does he tell you what to do?
No, sir.
Does he yell at you sometimes when he thinks you should have gone left when you merely went right?
Yes.
Oh, that happens.
A lot.
My kids would say the same thing. So nevertheless, we have the lines open, and we're going to talk to Dan in just a second. And 602-508-0960. And we've got three guys that actually are presently in the repair business. Chuck's kind of retired, and I'm kind of retired too, so it's really Derek and Kevin. Dan, good morning. How can we help you?
Yes, that's two questions. One, I have a Volkswagen diesel, It's a Jetta, and it's a 2005, and I'm looking for a shop on the west side of town.
Kevin, you want any part of that Jetta?
Well, how far west are you?
I'm in Goodyear.
Okay.
You guys are quite a bit north of there. I think I would have you call Harker's Automotive at 38th Avenue and Indian School. I want to tell you something, and I don't mean to hurt your feelings or anything, but us gray-haired guys know that the cost of the repair will, any kind of repair from a diesel side, a fuel injection pump or any kind of fuel delivery stuff, will exceed the value of the vehicle. And that's kind of the hitch and the giddy up when you look at a car that is a well-known car that doesn't, it has pattern failures, and it's not the most reliable. I mean, the VW Bug and the Jetta diesel are the difference between left and right, up and down, night and day. So if you go to Harker's, I would suggest you go there, 38th Avenue and Indian School, and I suggest you call first and talk to Ellen. Her husband Bob runs the shop, but Ellen runs the front. And just tell her you've got this VW Jetta diesel and you want somebody to check it out for you. That's what I would do.
Okay.
Tell me again the symptoms. What's it doing? Running poorly? It doesn't start? What do you got?
Well, right now it's I was just wanting a place to get oil changes and fuel filters and that kind of stuff. But it has been slow to crank on me, especially when it was cold.
Okay, I'm gonna walk back everything I said to you. If you're in the Goodyear area, I would use S&S Tire to do your oil changes and your tire rotation and stuff like that. Okay? With respect to slow cranking, that's no different than a gas motor. So we're going to check the battery's strength, and we're going to check how much amps the starter draws. We're going to make sure that somebody hasn't put peanut butter in the engine oil, so it drags it in the wintertime. So finding out that why it doesn't go da 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 and it goes ruh, 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 in an exaggerated way, you understand, that's the same as gas and diesel both. So if I would do you, I would say to the shop, I have a slow crank, and we need more information that it's only cold first thing in the morning. It never does it during the day. I'm just giving you examples. You would fill in the blanks. Sometimes it doesn't, and sometimes it doesn't, and blah, blah, blah. You kind of give them the square box, and then you say, can you give me an estimate? And, Kevin, we'd probably go with, like, an electrical systems test first.
Absolutely.
Test the battery, test the starter, test the alternator and the belt and all that kind of stuff. Let's make sure that all of that is up to snuff. Now, Kevin, electrical systems test. I'm going to say between 50 and 100, just depending on the shop.
I agree.
Okay.
Yeah, that's normally to test the battery, the starter, and the alternator. Make sure the starter doesn't have an exorbitant amount of draw on it. Make sure the alternator output is accurate and that the battery's good.
Yeah, and that's where you're going to almost run into the problem. You're going to find the problem in that test. I would say 85% of the time you're going to find the problem.
I agree.
It could also be, if you say it's just in the morning and not during the day, then the question is do you see smoke? Because if one of the injectors leaking, it's going to fill a cylinder with diesel fuel, and it's going to crank slow until we shove all that diesel fuel out the exhaust. But when it does start, it's going to blow black smoke. Where other times, it starts right up, and it doesn't blow black smoke. You see, there's those kinds of things that are very helpful and save you money on the diagnostic side. Does that make sense, Dan?
Yep. It seems like it does worse when it's been sitting for a couple of days.
Okay. Do you have a voltmeter? Do you have one of those digital voltmeters?
I do.
Okay. So this is what I would do if I were you. You can do a little bit of this yourself. Open up the hood, park the car, and check the battery voltage. It should be somewhere pretty close to 13 volts. Okay? The next day, you're going to leave the key, and keys in your pocket, and the next day you pop the hood, and you check the voltage again. And you do that 3 or 4 days in a row. The question is are we losing battery? Are we losing voltage over 3 or 4 days? Now when you come in and you go, it goes from 13 to 12.1, then that really gives us a head start. You saved yourself some diagnostic money.
Yeah, self-discharging on the battery.
Yes, or a trunk light is on, or the regulators, the diodes are out of the alternator. There's just a lot of things that can cause that problem. Under the best of conditions, if you want to test the alternator, here's a rough way to do it. A rough way to do it. You take the battery voltage, and then you start the car and hold the idle up. and you should have an increase of about 1 volt. So if it goes to 12.8, it should probably go pretty close to 12.9, or 12.8 to 13.8. So you're looking for about one volt higher than what we call dead battery. The key's in your pocket. What's the battery voltage? Now we start it up, bring the idle up, and what's the battery voltage? That doesn't guarantee the alternator's good, but that guarantees that the regulator's half working, but we don't know about the diodes and we don't know about the belt. So there's more testing that needs to be done. Okay?
Okay. You got time for another question?
Yes, go right ahead.
I got a motorhome. It's got a V10 Trident. It's a 2006-2007 model. And it's got a four-speed transmission with an overdrive.
Yeah, E40D, I think they call that.
Yeah, and that thing shifts terrible. When I'm cruising, say, around town, say at like 65-ish, and you get these little rises that go over the overpasses.
Mm-hmm.
It'll drop 3 or 4 miles per hour going up the hill, then the overdrive will kick off. And then I'm almost to the top of the hill, and then it downs, and from 4th to 3rd is a big distance. So it drops down to 3rd for a few seconds, and like the engines are going to explode, and then you're at the top of the hill, and then it shifts back to overdrive.
Okay. Kevin. What do you think?
Well, that's a toughie, especially with a motorhome because of the gross vehicle weight. It's a lot of weight to be pulling up the hill. As far as the shift patterns go, though, the first things we normally would look at is to see if the computer has seen anything. It does have OBD2 on it, being that 2006, you say. We look for trouble codes to start off with and see if the computer's seen anything that would be in relation to that.
One of the things that I hear him say is that he's going really deep into the throttle. And he's saying it's downshifting on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the computer's doing that. So the question is...
This is when I'm in cruise control, and I'm trying to... And it does this by itself. It's like, if you turn the overdrive off, it would do a lot better, but it doesn't have a button to turn the overdrive off.
Okay. What I'm saying is depending on where the throttle is, and I don't care if your foot's on it or if your, you know, crutch is on it or whatever, the throttle dictates where the transmission's going to go. So what I'm saying is I wonder if you have a loss of power. You're struggling. Have you always struggled to get this beast up the overpass?
Well, yeah, it's sitting there. It's at that speed in overdrive. It's only doing like 2,000 RPM.
I need you to answer the question, though, because what you're doing is you're giving me stuff that I heard you the first time. What I'm trying to determine is if the thing had power, it would climb up over a freeway with hardly any effort whatsoever. But if you're going up one side of the freeway and all of a sudden the computer is controlling that and it sees you're losing speed, it sees your foot 75% on the throttle, the computer's going to pick another gear. So the question is your fuel filter could be plugged up.
Well, like when I'm going a little faster, if I get up above the speed limit, then it will climb the hill fine because it's higher up on the torque curve.
Okay, so you think it's the transmission?
Well, I'm just wondering, is there some way I can get a switch installed in this thing that's where I can defeat the overdrive where it doesn't downshift all the time?
Are you sure there isn't a button at the end of the shifter?
No, the button on the end of the shifter puts it into, it doesn't turn off the overdrive, but it puts it in towing mode.
Okay. Well, I'm pretty sure it takes it out of overdrive when it does that. But nevertheless, I think what you should do is manually shift it and see how that see if it changes. Pull it down in low, drive it, and do that a couple of times, and then do it on flat and do it on a hill or whatever. Just manually shift it and see if you like it. Right now, I think that's an overdrive button. I think it's a tow haul mode, and of course that's 14 years ago that we dealt with that. But
2 minutes.
I'm pretty sure that if you push that button, it's going to drop a gear for you, and it's going to give you more power. And lockup is just one revolution of the motor, is one revolution of the transmission, where when we take the lockup out, then we're going to have a little bit of slipping going on. So I could be wrong, and I can promise you if I'm wrong, everybody will call me and tell me. But at that right now, what part of town do you live in?
I'm on the west side of Goodyear.
Okay. I don't have anybody out there. You can call S&S Tire and see if they have a mechanical area as well. You can call them and ask them. I'd probably bring it in to Billy at 25th Street Auto. And he's in Indian School in 25th. Martin Repairs at Indian School in 16th. We got Harker's at 38th Avenue and Indian School. He'd probably be a little closer. But you'd want to call him and tell him that you'd like to come because, you know, we need a big parking lot, and then we're going to go take a ride with you. Or you can say to them, what will you charge me to take a ride, and I can demonstrate what I'm showing you. That's probably the best thing to do. Do you have an owner's manual for that?
Yes.
Okay. Just look at it again. I think, call a couple of transmission shops if you want. And I think tow haul button just unlocks the torque converter, so that just takes the lockup away. But like I said, I could be wrong. Anyway, Dan, good luck to you. Good luck to you. And Dan, are you the motorhome guy or the Jetta guy?
Both.
Both. Okay, that was the second question. That's what that kind of threw me for a loop. Okay. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. If you'd like to ask us a car question, we'd be more than happy to help you. Of 11 o'clock, Mark Salem here, Chuck Nide, who's Derek's father, and Derek runs Auto Dynamics, which Chuck opened and ran a whole long time ago. And then we've got Kevin, who's the service manager at Auto Dynamics. So we've got in this room probably close to almost 100 years of auto repair, because you and I have 40 each. So, Kevin, how many you got?
I'm close to 30. Started out when I was 18.
So how's that? Is that 40, 80, and 30 is 110, and Derek?
Since 2008.
Okay, so we got more than the 100 I thought we were at. Nevertheless, let me tell you about a really great shop, Blackwell Automotive, up at 40th and Greenway. Tom's a good guy. He knows what he's talking about. He's really good at what he does. And right now, with the pandemic, then auto repair is one of those essential services, and all of us have had to fit that bill. So if you live anywhere near 40th and Greenway, and frankly, folks, that whole North Scottsdale area there by the 101 where it turns west, I can only find one shop that really does a good job, and that's Blackwell. Again, it's at 40th Street in Greenwell, and it's just north of Greenway on 40th Street. So if you're in that area and you're looking for a good auto repair shop, may I suggest Blackwell Automotive. Jim, good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I have two questions. One is, do you recommend cleaning MAF sensors? And the other one is, do in-tank electric fuel pumps, do they usually give an indication when they're starting to go out? Will it lay down at higher RPM or something?
Okay, Kevin, take the clean the MAF.
All right, so cleaning the MAF. Let me ask you, first of all, are you trying to remedy a symptom or a problem?
No, and they make a spray specifically for that, and I've had people tell me that it's not recommended that you clean those, but I don't know.
Okay, let me ask you, let me change his question, okay? Kevin, have you ever cleaned your MAF on your wife's car, your MAF airflow sensor?
Yes.
And was it symptom-driven or was it maintenance?
Symptom-driven.
Okay, Kevin, do you ever clean your wife's mass airflow sensor, or your own, or your mother's, or your father's, or your wife's brother and sister, as far as maintenance is concerned?
No.
Okay. I think that's the issue, Jim, is yes, you can clean your MAF. Yes, that's a really good way for us to sell you services. It's easy to sell. And a lot of us don't do it unless it's symptom driven. So if we have a mass airflow sensor code and we've got a reading, the mass airflow sensor has a little bitty wire on it. The wire needs to measure the air that goes over it. The wire is kind of red hot, and how the voltage changes is how the computer knows. The wire gets fuzzy like it's got a jacket on, and so you can't really see what it's supposed to see. So when you clean it, it's kind of like on one side, turn it over, and then we're done. If you use a whole can, you just wasted a whole can. But if you want to clean it yourself, then that's how you do it. You got a second?
The fuel pump in the fuel tank. The old mechanical pumps, as I recall, when they started going out, they would frequently start crapping out at high RPM. and then, you know, just get worse and worse. And I'm just wondering if there's any indication that these electric ones give before they fail.
Okay, go, Kevin.
Well, yeah, they can. Sometimes they become more audibly noticeable or noisy, you know, as the vehicle's running. Sometimes they'll start to whine or scream a little bit or what have you. And then sometimes if you have a symptom such as long cranking or extended cranking before a start, sometimes that can indicate that the fuel pump is bleeding down the pressure, not holding pressure up into the fuel rail. So there are a few different things that might give you an indication before it actually does fail, yes.
But let me add on to Kevin. He's right. It's fuel pressure regulator can go bad and drop the pressure. So that's not part of the pump. The pump will whine and make noise because the college kids keep an eighth of a tank to flat empty in their cars. We use the gasoline to cool and lubricate the pump. So unless you carry a quarter tank all the time, you're going to expose that pump to an environment it doesn't want to do. So in your particular case, let's change the question. Kevin, how many people have come in with a bad fuel pump that had symptoms before that baby just went to fuel pump heaven?
Very few.
Yeah. That's really the issue. If you have to go into the fuel system or you have to drop the tank for something, like an evaporative valve on the top of the tank that we have to replace, you got 100,000 miles, then yes, let's do the pump because the labor has already been absorbed by the other job we're doing. So let's do the pump and the sending unit at the same time. How many miles are you got on your car, Jim, that you're talking about?
Over 200,000.
And you've never had a pump in it?
Uh-uh.
Okay, well, let me just change that. Kevin, I got 200,000 miles on my car, and I'm on the original pump. Would you let me take your kids to Disneyland?
I would be a little wary of that, to be honest with you.
I would, too. Jim, I would think, based on the 200,000 miles, 200,000 miles represents 8 times around the equator. 8 times. Yeah. It's 25,000 miles around the girth of the Earth. So if my math's right, Derek, that's 8 times around the Earth. Mm-hmm. So that gives you an idea how many miles your car's driven. So, yes, I would replace the pump if I were you. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Thank you very much. Jay, you're up next. Jay?
Hello.
Hello, Jay. Go right ahead, sir.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We've got a 98 Chevy pickup work truck. It's got the just a two-wheel drive 4.3 V6.
Yep.
We're having some shifting issues on it just this last week or so. What's happening is when you start it up, it may or may not activate the shifting system, I guess the easiest way to describe it. What happens is that my gauges come up, the temperature, the oil pressure, et cetera, gas, all work properly, but the shift indicator light does not come on, the tachometer does not come up, and when you go to put it in gear, it goes into gear, but it will start in second gear instead of first. When it's working, the tach light comes on, the shift light comes on, the tach comes up, and the speedometer does not function either when this is not functioning.
Okay.
And so what I've done is a couple of times when it's doing that, when it doesn't come on, you'll see right away because the shift light doesn't come on.
Okay, we need to kind of speed this up, but what do you do to make it better, if that's where you're going?
Well, it'll come on randomly. It'll never come up. It'll never come on if you just start keep driving it.
All right. Let me explain. We've got a power problem somewhere because you got a tachometer that's going. You've got half of your dash, and some of this stuff is not working. So what we really have to do is get all that working first. I don't think I would do anything to the transmission. I think what I would do is fix the symptoms you have. So I would be looking at the ignition switch for sure, and I'd be looking at the park neutral switch for sure. But it sounds like there's a communication problem between all of the things you're talking about and that PC or that computer inside the car. But your 1998 computer might as well be a Fred Flintstone computer, because we've been around the block with that car a couple hundred times. So it's not going to be some sophisticated line that carries 400 signals a second. That 98 is going to be a little easier to diagnose. So I think what you need to do is deal with the tachometer and some of the instrument panel issues, and then that will lead you to the repair. I doubt very seriously if having your transmission rebuilt is going to fix this problem. I think the transmission is a symptom of the problem that you have. I only got 15 seconds, but I'm sure that, Jay, if you'll stay right there, then Kevin's going to have an opinion, but I'm 6 seconds away. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Okay, everybody, 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Let me tell you about another good shop in the city of Phoenix. Automatic Transmission Exchange is a great shop. He's at 40th Street in Van Buren. He's been there for a very, very long time. Phil knew Barney Rubble when Barney Rubble was driving a car with stone wheels. That's how old Phil is, but he's really, really good at transmissions. So he's the only transmission shop in the Phoenix area that I can recommend to you, and I know that because he's been around a long time, and that's part of the reason. That's a lot of the reason, because he's good at what he does. So Automatic Transmission Exchange, we call it ATE. And let's go back to Jay. Jay, you have another question.
Well, actually, we're still on the same issue. I don't think we actually got much figured out on this. I was starting to say that what on this transmission shifting thing, what happens is the tach light doesn't come on, the shift light doesn't come on when it's malfunctioning. What I have done, and it'll never come on while if you take off that way, start driving, it won't come on by itself. However, what I've done a couple times is found a space in the highway. I'm not crowded. I'll throw it into neutral, turn the key off to off position, restart it, and everything works. The shift light comes on, the tach comes on, speedometer comes on.
Okay. My point, Jay, is that all of these are symptoms of the problem. So we have to go backwards from what you're telling us. I think it's not in your best interest for us to start replacing all the parts that you're talking about. So it's not really a matter of if we duplicate it, we can see it, and then we know what circuits to check, and then we're probably going to find a loose wire or a bad connection or whatever, and that'll fix all the things you talked about.
Yep.
Those are the symptoms, but no one, including the very best technician in the whole wide world that I know of, and it's not me, no one's going to be able to go back through those kinds of electronic abnormalities and tell you what's on the root side. I remember a while, and you're probably the same way, Kevin, we had a car come in that the horn would honk intermittently, and I'm jazzing this up, okay? The car would start on its own and shut off, and the windows would roll up and down and all that kind of stuff. All with these weird problems. Someone had done some intake manifold work, and they didn't hook up the ground wire between the firewall and the back of the block. And that was it.
Sure.
So it's a matter of, and what clued in this technician who told me this, he says the intake manifold and the valve covers were all painted. So I knew somebody had just been in that part of the motor. So the battery goes from there to the engine, and the engine to the frame, and from the back of the engine to the cowl, which is the part underneath the windshield. And we're going to ground everything on the car by hopscotching the ground around. So I don't know what it is, but I can tell you there's lots of guys in this town can fix it for you. It's just a matter of you.
Well, I'm just wondering, can you think there's a possibility ignition switch is faulty on this, or the PCM? I did pull some codes off of the OBD2.
Okay.
They're PO740, PO753.
What are they? Just give me the names of them. Just give me the names of them.
Well, Okay,
I can't tell you because there's about 400 codes, so I can't keep them all in my mind. I don't know. If you want to put an ignition switch in it, go ahead. If you want to just go by the codes, go ahead. It's okay. I've given you the best advice I can give you. I would just give the symptoms to a shop and ask them what their diagnostic process is. But can it be the ignition switch? Yeah, but your symptoms, the ignition switch isn't going to come and go. So when the ignition switch loses its ability to work, most of the time that circuit's just gone. So I don't know. I don't know. So and of course all the guys on the internet can guess on what's wrong with it, but they're not going to be any better than I am. And even though Chuck and I have worked on, I don't know, I got 38,000 customers and I've got 300,000 work orders, so I think we've probably worked on our fair share. This isn't going to be a tough thing, Jay. It isn't going to be a tough thing. Take it to a shop and have them do it, or if you want to guess, certainly you're welcome to do that. Sam, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Oh, hi. I got a question about wheel bearings, front wheel bearings on a 95 Chevy Astro van. I know you've talked before about you can preload by turning left or right and listen if it's got a whine, or you're loading one of the bearings so you know which one it is. Can you explain that?
Sure, I can. Sure, I can. What they're talking about, Kevin, is in the past we've talked about. Am I getting some feedback? Oh, I'll push that button and then the feedback goes away. I'm sorry, Gil. That's my fault. When you're taking a sweeping right turn on a cloverleaf at 40 or 50 miles an hour, right turn, you're loading the outside bearing on the left side and the inside bearing on the right side. Does that make sense to you?
You're loading the right outer?
And you make a right turn, you're on the right inner and the left outer. The vehicle is leaning to the left as you turn right on this cloverleaf. So if you think about it, and it's got four wheel bearings in the front, when you're making this right turn on the cloverleaf, it's the outside bearing on the left side and the inside bearing on the right side. But let me ask you a question. If you've got a bearing noise and you know it's a noise, you're not going to replace just one bearing on your Astro van. You're going to take the hub off. There's going to be metal all over. You're going to clean it all up. You're going to put new races and new bearings in it.
So yes. That's exactly what I did.
Okay. Do you still have the noise?
No.
Okay.
I was making a left sweeping turn like the Durango curve.
Yes.
And that's when I noticed the noise, and I replaced the right side bearing. I don't remember if it was the inner or the outer.
Okay.
But I replaced, it was the inner. Would that be correct?
If it's a sweeping left, it should have been the right outer, but it doesn't really make any difference. Is the problem solved?
Yes.
Okay.
The problem is gone.
Perfect. So somehow or another, you recognized that, and so if it did it on the left turn, I bet it didn't do it on the right turn.
That's right.
Okay.
It did not.
All right. So what we do sometimes, and Kevin, we take two guys out there, and they drive this Astro van. And so they're both sitting with their feet flat on the ground. Of course, the driver's using his right foot for the throttle, but his left foot is flat on the carpet. So they're going to do a clover leaf to the right and clover leaf to the left. The two of them will decide where that noise is at. It's going to come from the right side or the left side. Sometimes we go out behind the bashes and we just start going in tight circles. And right. So then we switch places. And then the guys go, what do you think it's this? I think it's on the driver's side. I think it's on the driver's side too. So by switching places, you're going to actually figure it out. But you did a good job. If the noise is gone, then if you need a job, then.
And there was another thing. It's like I used to work at gas stations when I was, 17 or 18. And this was like at 75th Avenue and Indian School, Woody's Inco.
Yeah,
and a guy came in there, and he said, "Yeah, I have a dollar's worth." So I go back to the pump and pump him a dollar, and he'll go to the window and get paid, and he gives me 50 cents. And I said, "You owe me 50 cents." He said, "No, I said a half a dollar's worth."
Yeah,
I got took on that.
Well, it was. Chuck and I have stories just like you do. Chuck and I have those kinds of stories where, people would bring a tire in to patch and we'd patch it, and then they'd bring a tire back in and it didn't have the marks on it where we marked the valve stem with yellow chalk, and it was blown up, and they said, "Oh, it's your tire." And then you go over to the car and it's still got the tire we patched, and it's got the yellow mark where the valve stem was at. And so now you had this battle between the two of them. But anyway, thank you very much, Sam. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. No? Okay. How many? What's your hours?
Where's Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturdays from 8 to 2.
Okay. And that's a really good thing on the Saturdays. We've backed off on the Saturdays because we're running from 7 in the morning till 6 at night.
Right.
And but the Saturday, there's lots of people that need help on Saturdays, but we're surrounded with lots of shops that do Saturdays. It's what we found is that there's nothing wrong with Saturdays, but a lot of it is diagnostic that shows up on Monday.
Sure.
And you push it back until Monday. The problem with us is Monday's already booked on Thursday, so it's hard for us to transition that from Saturday. Maybe it has to be Tuesday or Wednesday. And a lot of shops, I'm sure yours gets ahead a day or so in appointments, and so that's what it kind of works out to be. How many techs have you got?
4.
Okay. And do they handle everything from transmissions and engines to oil changes and brakes and all that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. We do everything bumper to bumper. I don't overhaul transmissions.
Okay.
But otherwise, yeah, bumper to bumper.
Okay. If you're going to get a transmission, is it from a local vendor? Are you going to do a rebuild on it, or are you going to have someone rebuild it for you, take it out, R&R, and then have them do it? What kind of a process?
We're going to have two different options. We're either going to buy an OEM replacement from the manufacturer, from the dealer.
Okay.
Or I do have a local rebuilder that I utilize that
has been successful over the years.
Absolutely. We've used them for 20-plus years.
I think to draw the line, what we're talking about is in the situation that we're in when it comes to transmissions, we're not going to buy a Prius transmission or one of those CVTs other than from the dealer.
Right.
Because you're going to get nothing but trouble.
Absolutely.
And so those transmissions are real sophisticated, and it takes special stuff to do it. But nobody's rebuilding them either.
No.
So the only choice you got is new.
Yes,
new
sir.
In the box. And so obviously that's going to be a heavier hit than the old transmission in the 70 pickup trucks.
Oh, for sure.
So that's the same way with us. The sophistication level on those constant velocity transmissions, which really have one speed, so to speak. So you're going to go up to 70 miles an hour. So there's no shift points. It's just kind of like a bicycle.
Right.
In the sense, there's really no way to fix those. And it's hard enough to diagnose them.
Very true.
And so there's no place that you can get them. Now, there's guys on the internet that will sell them. But when you look at their reviews, that might cause you some heartburn.
Oh, absolutely. Pretty risky to do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and it's still risky to buy them from the manufacturer, because if the unit ends up not performing differently than it was, but not performing to standards, then the question becomes, was it bad in the box, or did you guys install it wrong?
Certainly.
And you run into those kinds of situations. Those are unfortunate, but that's what we're at, you know, right now. We buy lots of transmission rebuilt from different vendors that we've used for day in and day out, but none of them are doing the Prius and the constant velocity ones.
No. So I don't know of any that are either.
Yeah, that's a real problem when it comes to those kinds of cars. That transmission is the big red flag.
Yes.
But it's a fuel economy transmission, so it's supposed to give you better fuel economy, and therefore the car's better for you and all that other kind of stuff.
Right.
So, Derek, what kind of brand of oil are you pouring?
Shell.
He just told you that. Yeah. And have you had Shell for a very long time?
Yeah, we sure have.
So you've had, how long have you had Shell? 5 years?
Oh, I'm guessing 10 plus.
Okay. And that's kind of nice having that relationship with them. I had a Valvoline relationship from 79 to 94. And it was a good relationship. But in 1994, we left them and we went to Shell. And then probably 3-4 years ago, we went to Chevron. And it really, as you well know, it has to do with the benefits. They came in and changed our tanks for us, and all we had to do was promise them 5 years worth of work. But they put tanks in. Ours were old and leaking, and so we had problems with them, and it was a good relationship. We got something, they got something.
Sure.
So you guys are the same way with Shell.
Yeah.
Do they bring you trash cans that say Shell and hats that say Shell and pens that say Shell?
They have, sure. They've given me about 10 years worth of floor mats, too. So.
Yeah. And now, do they print the name of your shop on them?
No, they're just the generic with the brand name on them.
Okay.
Don't have a shop name on them.
And there's some of them that are starting to do that. Some of the oil vendors will start to do that. They'll say, give me your logo, and I'll have a bunch of them printed.
Right.
So that's kind of the best part of our industry, though, is the satisfaction of fixing somebody's car, especially when you hear everybody else has tried and couldn't.
Certainly.
And that, but there's also times that you hear the story and you think to yourself, this is a no-win situation.
Very
and
true.
Especially when it's one of those that it only happens on Thursday at 2 o'clock.
or something like that. It only happens when my wife's in the car. It only happens when we're doing 62.5 miles an hour. And I guess the answer is wait till it gets worse and easier to find.
Absolutely.
That you don't have any other choice, because guessing is going to cost you a lot more money than if you just wait.
Yeah, more constant to it, you know.
Yeah.
More regular patterns.
Right.
And it helps dramatically.
The intermittent problems are the worst. But it's I think our industry is doing a better job in explaining to them we need more information. Exactly. Is there a relationship between the engine hot and cold when this happens? Is there a relationship between the weather? Is the air on? Is the air off? And like we talked to that one guy that had a shift problem, manually shifted. Does that fix it?
Right.
So as you manually shift that. I did get a call. That is an overdrive button, but they also have a overdrive and a fourth gear, I think, and you can shift out of it's an overdrive button, but then they have a lockup on the Prindle, on the park reverse neutral. So you can push the button and kick off the lockup, and then you can pull it down into another gear. So you have really two gears in there, but one of them is going to be where you shift it. Derek, you know what the Prindle is?
No.
Okay. Chuck, you know what the Prindle is? Okay. No. You know what the Prindle is?
Absolutely.
Okay. The Prindle is the little window on your dashboard that says park, reverse, neutral, drive.
And low.
And low. Mm-hmm. That's called the Prindle. And I didn't know that until about a year ago. Some older guy said, I think my Prindle's not working. And I'm saying, okay, just a minute. So I went in to my parts guy, and I said, have we ever ordered a Prindle? He goes, I don't know what a Prindle is. So I went out to the Eddie, and I said, you know what a Prindle is? And he goes, well, let's Google it. So you Google Prindle, and it's park, reverse, neutral, drive, and low. And so we went out there, and it was an older car. And if you'll remember, we used to have a little cable that pulled the PRN. Well, the cable's
right.
Broken.
Yeah.
So, but the newer cars do that electronically. But
right.
The older cars we used a cable. So the Prindle.
Yeah, a little tiny wire that came down from the Prindle down to a little area on a piece of the column that would actually drag it
right.
And move it from park, reverse, neutral, drive, low.
And sometimes they'd get out of whack, and the customer would say, you know, I'm in neutral, but I'm driving down the road. Okay, well, this is a Prindle problem. But your dad didn't know that. That's important, Derek. Chuck, your dad, who's been in the business for 50 years, didn't know what a Prindle was.
I can barely find the dipstick on my car, let alone a Prindle. I'd have to Google it, too.
You know, Googling things is just unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I was talking to a guy the other day that was Hispanic, and we could talk on our phones. I could talk to it and interpret it to Spanish and hand it to him, and then he could turn around. And he used lots of bad words. My phone didn't necessarily use those bad words, but he did. But that was really interesting, the technology. What's our kids going to do? Here's what my fear is. Our kids are going to be like the Jetsons. They're going to fly around in their cars. What about that?
Very possible.
Can you imagine fixing those cars with the risk being that if you don't fix a ride, it's going to crash?
Yeah.
They better have a parachute on that Jetson car in case the risk and reward, it kind of gets out of hand, I think.
I agree.
So it makes a big difference. Well, the newer model cars, Chuck, are much better than the older model cars. They last a lot longer. The engines will go 200,000 or 300,000 miles. And I think you'll agree with me that most of the time we ended up doing a transmission at 30, 40, 50, 60, 70,000 miles on the cars that we broke into. Sure. And certainly between around 150, they were blowing smokes a doggone bad. You couldn't drive them.
Oh, yeah.
So when people talk about 200,000 or 300,000 miles on a car, they don't really understand what that is.
Mm-hmm.
But that one guy that had 200,000 miles,
right.
eight times around the earth. It puts it in perspective for you.
Yeah.
So it's easier to understand. That car is really giving you good service. Oh, it's only got 200,000 miles. I know, but that's eight times around the earth. I haven't driven that. Okay. That's right. Anyway, Auto Dynamics, thank you. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Chuck. Thank you, Derek. And for the rest of you, please drive safely, wear your seatbelt, and if somebody does something nice for you, then stick your arm out the window and say thank you. We don't do that as much as we do. I'll see you next Saturday.